The views expressed on the following broadcasts do not necessarily reflect those of KHLT, Take 12 Radio, or our affiliates. The opinions on this show should not be considered as medical, psychological, or professional advice and are those of the host, co-host, and guest. Take 12 Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting are not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship.
One day at a time with its failures and fears. Portion of pain and burden of care, we must meet.
Welcome to Walking Through the Language of the Heart, a journey into the grapevine writings of Alcoholics Anonymous co-founder Bill W. And now, here are your co-hosts, Chris S. and the Monty Man.
Well, come on in, family, sit on down, and welcome to episode 17 of this workshop that Chris S. and I are presenting for you. From the Language of the Heart, Bill W.'s Grapevine Writings. And with me right now is Chris S. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Monty. How you doing this week?
It's been an interesting week. Every week is interesting. Every day is interesting. I mean, there's... I'm blown away by God's world. I really, really am. And I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to be doing stuff like this. Thursdays is the day we record this, and then we post it and broadcast it on Fridays, listeners. Just a little piece of Take 12 trivia there for you. But Thursdays is like a packed, jam-packed day. I mean, I'm up early in the morning. I got to get stuff done in the studio. Then I'm out to the treatment facility that I have a service commitment for. And that's right up to the line of walking here in the studio and doing what we do here at Walking Through the Language of the Heart. And it's those kind of days, man. I live for them. They're exciting. I had two guys that I work with come back from appointments with their POs, and their probation officers are telling them, man, you guys are making my job easy. You guys are rocking your recovery. I hear stuff like that, and it's uplifting, and it makes it all worth it, right?
Absolutely. You know, there's a line in the book Alcoholics Anonymous that I didn't understand for a long, long time. It was a question, and they said, or are you looking for what you can pack into the stream of life. Mm. And I always wondered, you know, what are they talking about? What are they talking about there? Well, I'll tell you what, Monty, you and I pack some stuff into the stream of life, don't we?
Yeah, we do indeed. Absolutely. Okay, well, let's see. Article 17 in this book, listeners, by the way, if you go to take12radio.com and you click on Recovery Workshops, there you'll find Walking Through the Language of the Heart. And there's a link there where you can purchase this book if you'd like to get a copy of it. It's an Amazon link, so you'll get it pretty quickly. This is Article 17, and it's entitled Traditions Stressed in Memphis Talk. So lead us forth there, my friend.
Sure, Monty. Sure. This was in the October 1947 grapevine, so we are really going back.
Yeah.
And we're going back into the early history of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now what, you know, just to start this off, what I know about the traditions, and it was that Bill came up with them, all right? Bill basically built them. And then he had to promote them within the fellowship. And there's a lot of stories. There's a lot of stories about him traveling around the country. And, you know, whenever he would go somewhere, they would get him to speak. I don't care what meeting he walked into. They wanted Bill to speak, obviously. And he would he got a reputation for touting the traditions. I think this is right around the time he started doing that. So he got this reputation for touting the traditions. And people were not, you know, as receptive as maybe he would have liked. And they would grab him before the meeting and they would say, Bill, please don't talk about the traditions. Tell the bedtime story. Tell the bedtime story. And what the bedtime story was Bill's personal, you know, recovery story. And they called it the bedtime story because there would be people asleep by the time he was finished with it. You know, if you've ever heard any of the Bill Wilson tapes, he kind of talks like this.
Yeah.
Monty. You know, and you can just see people dropping like flies in the audience. But God bless him. So anyway, that's kind of what I think this is, you know, this is going to head toward. Like, one, you know, he is going to be promoting the traditions. And they didn't catch on like wildfire. I mean, he really had to work very, very hard, and he had to call in a lot of favors for these traditions to be ratified, you know, several years later. He really had to work hard. He felt very, very strongly about it. So that being said, let's get started. Traditions stressed in Memphis talk, urging all members of Alcoholics Anonymous to strive for humility before success and for unity before fame. Bill W., speaking before the 3rd Annual Southern Regional Convention in Memphis, Tennessee on September 19th, reviewed the 12 suggested traditions for the organization. Remember, they started out when we were early on in this workshop, Monty. He was calling them the public relations policies and stuff.
Right.
So now they've become the traditions, pointing out that the success of AA could be heady wine and a serious problem. Bill reminded members that as alcoholics, we are a people who could not exist at all except for the grace of God. And humility was something that Bill stressed over and over and over again. I'm not sure if it was a problem he personally had, or he just understood that we all needed to develop the capacity of humility, or else we'd ego our way out of this whole thing.
Sure.
You know? So here are the highlights of the talk as given to the AA Grapevine in advance of the Memphis meeting.
Hmm.
Now, also in the early days, they paid a lot of attention to their talks. Many of the people wrote their talks out. Many of them had outlines, or they practiced them. You know, it's become traditional for us to walk up in front of the mic, say a little prayer, and get going, you know, and let the Spirit move us. That's not really so in the early days with some of these, you know, foundational members. They really were very definitive about what they were going to be sharing from behind the podium. So it doesn't surprise me that he had notes, or he had the talk written out, and he was able to give it to the Grapevine before he even, you know, did the talk in Memphis. So it's kind of interesting. Some years ago, Dr. Bob and I, among others, did a lot of traveling and speaking at AA groups the length and breadth of the country. Alcoholics Anonymous was just starting its astonishing growth. There was concern whether we could successfully expand so fast. Widely separated clusters of AA were making their uncertain start, often too far from the original few groups to get much direct help. Many had to rely wholly on literature and letters. And letters were a huge thing. There's many of them still exist in the archives, the different Alcoholics Anonymous archives. And if you can pry your way in, you know, to the archives to do some digging, which is not easy, you can find a lot of these letters. Some of the people we know were able to do that. You know, Dick B was one of them. Ernie K. There's a number of people who were able to really dig in. Bill S., the guy who wrote the writing of the Big Book, was able to, you know, find his way into some really serious archive stuff. So this stuff still exists. To meet this seeming emergency, the few of us who could do so got out among the new groups. We wanted to bring our experience and encouragement directly to the incoming thousands who were still unsure. We wanted them to feel a part of the growing whole. We wanted them to see that AA had nothing to do with geography, that it would work for them under any condition whatever. We wish to foster a sound growth and the spirit of unity. So a few of us traveled much, and Bill Wilson was certainly one of them. Times have changed, as everyone knows. AA has since exceeded our wildest expectations. This is in 1947, AA exceeded their wildest expectations. Speaking for Dr. Bob and myself, we feel that we oldsters need to take the prominent roles, need not take the prominent roles we once did. AA leadership is becoming happily and healthily a rotating matter. This is the first time I think that he has used the term rotating or rotation, mm-hmm. which became a very, very important part of the concepts and how groups handle their officer commitments. And besides our literature, a generous press and thousands of new travelers are carrying AA to every corner of the world. That's in 1947. You know, the years after 1947, many, many countries were, people traveled to the, I know Russia, you know, the message was carried into Russia, I think in the 70s, you know. So over the years that were gonna come from 1947, it continued to expand. And I think it's in, you know, 170 countries now or something like that. It's a pretty remarkable number. But I also want to say, don't anybody out there ever trust me when I quote a number. Because the only thing I'm sure about is it's not going to be accurate. So anyway. Yet there does remain a problem, a serious problem, in whose solution AAs will expect us oldsters to occasionally take a hand. That is the problem of success itself. Always a heady wine, success may sometimes cause us to forget that each of us lives on borrowed time. We may forget that we are people who cannot exist at all, but for the grace of God. The wine of forgetfulness might make us dream that Alcoholics Anonymous was our success rather than God's will. The very malignancy which once tore us apart personally could again commence to rend us as groups. False pride might lead us to controversy, to claims of power and prestige, to bickering over property, money, and personal authority. We would not be human if these illnesses did not sometimes attack us. I love this. We are a people who cannot exist at all but for the grace of God. Don't you know that that's true today, Monty?
Absolutely. There's a scripture verse that says that no good thing lives in me that's in my sinful nature. I mean, left to my own devices, I mess everything up, man. I cannot move forward without the power of God in my life. And I'm so grateful to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous for, I had a relationship, although it was pretty sketchy, I had a relationship with God before I entered into the whole 12-step world. But I am telling you, it did not gel. It did not come together until the application and implementation of those 12 spiritual principles. It just didn't. And once it did, I chase after it like my sponsor used to say. I chase after it like it's a lost diamond ring instead of an old slipper. You know, it's amazing stuff. What I notice here also is the way that Bill W. refers to God. This is coming from a man who was highly influenced, and correct me if I'm wrong, by the bitterness of his grandfather towards religion and spiritual matters. He wasn't real on board with the whole God thing in the beginning, true?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So his grandfather. Now, I've gone up to the Wilson House. I think I've done like 20 some workshops up at the Wilson House. And that's where Bill's grandfather lived. And that's where he was born and raised, right? So, when his father ran off to Canada to cut marble, and the next day his mother went off to New York City to become a doctor, and they just left him and his sister with Grandpa Griffin, you know. So, hey, Grandpa, you know, Griffith, I think it is, right? So he grew up there. Now this great story about this guy. Now, he was antagonistic toward the religious people. You got to understand, the Wilson House is right next door to a church. I mean, it's you know, right across the street is a church. So yes. So he's got a big bar, you know, big bar, restaurant, you know, hotel, and right next door is a church. So you know, some antagonism, you know, developed with the grandfather over the years, and he would criticize, oh, look at those people, you know, filing in and out of the church, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, he'd do a lot of that. Now, here's the amazing part of the story. He had a problem with alcohol. Now, can you imagine Bill's grandfather having a problem with alcohol? How unusual would that be? Anyway, one day, he grabbed his jug, because a lot of people, you know, had the big Snuffy Smith jugs, you know, and he decided, he was in a weird mood. He decided he was going to climb Mount Aeolus. Mount Aeolus, you can see from the Wilson. You can see it out of Bill's bedroom windows, big mountain. And he decides he's going to climb up on the mountain. Now, here's what happened to him up on the mountain while he's drinking his jug of wine. He had a spiritual experience, some type of spiritual experience. And he came down off that mountain completely changed. As a matter of fact, he walked into the church where a church service was being conducted, pushed the preacher away from the podium, and started witnessing to the congregation about his spiritual experience up on the mountain. You know, so I don't know whether that happened while Bill was still living there, or it happened after he had moved away and joined the army. But I always thought that was a very, very interesting anecdote about the Wilson family. And this is basically the guy that raised Bill. So yeah, he had some antagonism, but he also had a spiritual experience. Mm. You know, isn't that the way it is for a lot of us? A lot of us come in just, you know, absolutely, you know, fundamentally prejudiced about religion and God and everything like that. I mean, you know, but we come to believe. And many of us, you know, already have theological convictions galore, right?
Yeah.
But we come to believe through evidence and experience.
Yeah.
Because the evidence is in our personal growth, and the experience is in our you know, looking around the fellowship and watching people change. So that's kind of what I have to say on that.
Yeah. That just shows.
So it says here.
That just shows once again.
No, go ahead.
That just shows once again that God meets people where they're at. Right? I mean, he didn't have to get himself cleaned up. I mean, he's drinking, for crying out loud. You know, he goes up on this mm-hmm. to have this mountaintop experience with his jug, and he ends up coming back having an experience with the Almighty. I just, things like that, just it's wonderful stuff. It's wonderful stuff.
So I'm gonna go off on a complete tangent.
All right. Good.
I read this marvelous book. You know, I read like it's my job, right?
Yeah.
I read this marvelous book lately, and it's called The Solace of Fierce Landscapes. And what it is it's a study of seeking God in fierce landscapes, up on mountains and deserts. Now, just think, Monty, you know, not only just from the Bible, but from all kinds of spiritual literature, how many people have gone to the fierce landscapes to experience God? And Bill Wilson's grandfather did it. You know, he went up on the mountain, climbed the mountain.
Wow.
So that's a tangent. Anyway, that's a tangent.
I love your tangents.
So it says here, therefore, many of us think today that the main problem of Alcoholics Anonymous is this: how, as a movement, shall we maintain our humility and so our unity in the face of what the world calls a great triumph? Perhaps we need not look far afield for an answer. We need only adapt and apply to our group life those principles upon which each of us has founded his own recovery. If humility can expel the obsession to drink alcohol, then surely humility can be our antidote for that subtle wine called success. So he's really on to this. Whenever a power driver shows up in a 12-step group or something, the group usually dwindles. You know, somebody who wants to take over and wants to be the chairperson and wants, I'm gonna be the chairperson for the next 4 years. You know, when something like that happens, usually the group dwindles. But when there's an atmosphere of humility, you know, it kind of just moves along, and grows as a group. So he's on to something. I also believe, because of all the criticism he was getting from all kinds of different people, especially in the Midwest, that he really wanted to make humility a part of the AA program, because there were some people he was worried about. you know what I mean? Some of the stuff that they were doing, he was worrying about. So there's probably a double motive, you know, for this humility stuff.
Sure.
So it says, Bill then went on to explain in detail the 12 points of tradition first printed in an article in the April 1946 issue of the AA Grapevine, which we read. 2 years ago, my old friends urged that I try to sum up our experience of living and working together, that I try to state those definite principles of group conduct, which had then quite clearly emerged from a decade of strenuous trial and error. In the spirit of our original 12 steps, and strictly within the ample proofs of our experience, I made the following tentative attempt. 12 points to assure our future. In Alcoholics Anonymous tradition of relations, recently revised in light of later experience. Mm. So we're experiencing in this workshop the evolution of the 12 traditions, which is very cool. You know, the 12 steps had been pretty much, you know, etched in stone prior to the Grapevine being published. But this is very interesting. And it says this. Our experience has taught us that, number one, each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. AA must continue to live, or most of us will surely die. Hence, our common welfare comes first, but individual welfare follows close afterward. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Three, our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Hence, we may refuse none who wish to recover. Nor ought AA membership ever depend upon money or conformity. Any two or three alcoholics gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided, of course, that as a group, they have no other affiliation. Four, with respect to its own affairs, each AA group should be responsible to no other authority than its own conscience. But when its plans concern the welfare of neighboring groups also, those groups ought to be consulted. And no group, regional committee, or individual should ever take any action that might greatly affect AA as a whole without conferring with the trustees of the Alcoholic Foundation. On such issues, our common welfare is paramount. Five, each Alcoholics Anonymous group ought to be a spiritual entity having but one primary purpose, that of carrying its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, problems of money, property, and authority may easily divert us from our primary spiritual aim. We think, therefore, that any considerable property of genuine use to AA should be separately incorporated and managed, thus dividing the material from the spiritual. An AA group as such should never go into business. Secondary aids to AA, such as clubs or hospitals, which require much property or administration, ought to be incorporated and so set apart that, if necessary, they can be freely discarded by the groups. Hence, such facilities ought not use the AA name. Their management should be the sole responsibility of those people who financially support them. For clubs, AA managers are usually preferred, but hospitals, as well as other places of recuperation, ought to be well outside AA and medically supervised. While an AA group may cooperate with anyone, such cooperation ought never go so far as affiliation or endorsement actual or implied. An AA group can bind itself to no one. 7, AA groups themselves ought to be fully supported by the voluntary contributions of their own members. We think that each group should soon achieve this ideal, that any public solicitation of funds using the name of Alcoholics Anonymous is highly dangerous, whether by groups, clubs, hospitals, or other outside agencies, that acceptance of large gifts from any source or of contributions carrying any obligation whatever is unwise. Then, 2, we view with much concern those AA treasuries which continue beyond prudent reserves to accumulate funds for no stated AA purpose. Experience has often warned us that nothing can so surely destroy our spiritual heritage as futile disputes over property, money, and authority. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain ever non-professional. We define professionalism as the occupation of counseling alcoholics for fees or hire. But we may employ alcoholics where they are going to perform those services for which we might otherwise have to engage non-alcoholics. Such special services may be well recompensed, but our usual AA 12-step work is never to be paid for. 9, each AA group needs the least possible organization. Rotating leadership is the best. The small group may elect a secretary, the large group its rotating committee, and the groups of a large metropolitan area their central or intergroup committee, which often employs a full-time secretary. The trustees of the Alcoholic Foundation are, in effect, our general service committee. They are the custodians of our AA tradition and the receivers of voluntary AA contributions by which we maintain the AA General Service Office at New York. They are authorized by the groups to handle our overall public relations, and they guarantee the integrity of our principal newspaper, the AA Grapevine. All such representatives are to be guided in the spirit of service, for true leaders in AA are but trusted and experienced servants of the whole. They derive no real authority from their titles. They do not govern. Universal respect is the key to their usefulness. 10, no AA group or member should ever, in such a way as to implicate AA, express any opinion on outside controversial issues, particularly those of politics, alcohol reform, or sectarian religion. The Alcoholics Anonymous groups oppose no one. Concerning such matters, they can express no views whatever. 11, our relations with the general public should be characterized by personal anonymity. We think AA ought to avoid sensational advertising. Our names and pictures as AA members ought not be broadcast, filmed, or publicly printed. Our public relations should be guided by the principle of attraction rather than promotion. There is never need to praise ourselves. We feel it better to let our friends recommend us. 12, and finally, we of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the principle of anonymity has an immense spiritual significance. It reminds us that we're to place principles before personalities, that we are to actually to practice a genuine humility to this end, that our great blessings may never spoil us, that we shall forever live in thankful contemplation of him who provides over us all. So what I know about the traditions, Monty, this is the core of what became the 12 traditions. There's been some changes, you know, between what you read here and what you'll read in the 12 steps and 12 traditions. But this is it. This is the Megillah of the 12 traditions. And what I gather out of this particular Grapevine article is it was first presented in Memphis in 1947, mm-hmm. which is really interesting, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah. So let me ask you this. Do you know what the process was or how the different versions came about? I mean, because obviously it's saying the same thing that we read in the 12 and 12, but there's like the abbreviated version, then there's the long version, which is shorter than the abbreviated version, then there's this version. I mean, how did that all come to pass like that?
I believe it's mostly Bill. Okay, he was a rewriter. He was an improver. he would re-edit and do a different version. You know, he did a lot of that.
Yeah.
You know, the stories about the Big Book were, there were thousands of pages that were thrown away in the writing of that book, because he just would revise and improve on previous work. So I think there was a lot of that. Also, the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions had some editorial help. Now, an oral tradition, whether this was true or not, was that a man named Tom Powers helped. And I believe there was another individual. Now, Tom Powers, I know a little bit about, because I've sought out his recordings. He was real good friends with Bill, you know, in the 40s and 50s. And he broke away. This guy, this is another tangent I'm going on, Monty. This guy broke away from Alcoholics Anonymous and started All Addicts Anonymous or something like that. And he started a huge commune up in New York State, which is still populated by people that were influenced by Tom Powers. You know, they bought all these homes in this town, and you know, they went up there and they lived a recovered life. But if you listen to any of his stories, which you know, in any of his tapes, some of his stuff has been recorded, he is clear on the 12 steps. You know, he is clear on what Alcoholics Anonymous was and what Alcoholics Anonymous was not. I think what happened with him was he wanted to help more people than just alcoholics. He wanted to help people with drug problems and stuff like that. But supposedly he had a hand in the editing of the essays on the steps and the 12 traditions. Now, to what extent that was, I'm not an AA historian. Somebody might know. But I don't. So anyway, that's a long answer.
Yeah.
And a convoluted answer to a short question.
Sure.
So Bill wants to protect Alcoholics Anonymous from us. Okay? and himself. He's saying himself, right? Yeah. But he wants to protect it from us. Now, I gotta tell you, you can tell somebody's new because they want to change stuff.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Now there's something going on. There's something going on now that I'm going to share. Cause I got involved in it over the last week and I want to share about it, Monty. And it has something to do with the humility, and it has something to do with the structure of Alcoholics Anonymous and how we are but trusted servants, like the people with the, you know, the trustees and all that. He's saying they're trusted servants, and I see something going on now that I think should be looked at. Okay, and here's what it is: Alcoholics Anonymous has a proposal on the table to publish a revised version of the book Alcoholics Anonymous. All right. I have a feeling that they want to, you know, degenderize it. I have a feeling there's some people that want to update it and you know, take some of the terminology out that doesn't make a lot of sense today. You know, even the Wright brothers, there's probably a lot of people who don't even know who they are, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a proposal on the table to do this. Now, if you want to revise the book Alcoholics Anonymous, it's a very, very difficult process. So what happens is the fifth edition of the Big Book is going to come out soon. They're soliciting for stories for it right now. That text, the first 164 pages and the doctor's opinion of that text are going to remain unchanged. Okay, what's going to be changed is the stories, and the stories are going to express, you know, more diversity. That's really what their point is with the story, to open up Alcoholics Anonymous in a more diverse way than it is today. And they're going to try to do that by putting stories in there from every kind of person and every kind of background that you can find. All right. But this revised this rewritten text is being handled in a very strange way. And I found out I was on a Zoom call with concerned people about this, and I found out some information on it that I think you'll find interesting. Now, you can't just rewrite the big book. There's conference approvals and all kind, you know, there's committees and there's all kinds of stuff that has to happen. You know, votes need to be taken and everything, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's really the process for the book Alcoholics Anonymous. So you know how Alcoholics Anonymous is going to get this written? They're calling it a translation. Because when they do translations for different countries and everything, yeah, there's just a small committee of people. There's just a small committee of people, and they get the translation done. Nobody approves nothing. It just happens, right? You know, you need a big book written in Swahili. You know, there's a little committee that'll go take care of it, and you know, 2 years later, you'll have a copy of the big book in Swahili. So how they're arranging this is, they're saying it's a plain language big book. So it is being translated from English into English. And they can bypass all the approvals and all the voting and all the groups that would have a hard time with it. They don't have to deal with any of them. It's a translation. And that's how it's happening. Now,
wow!
Give me some of your feedback on that.
Yeah. Oh boy. Oh boy. okay, we're going down a trail. We're gonna go down a trail here. I'm experiencing something very similar right now with a. Wow, this is like deja vu. With a guy. His name is Brian Simmons. And I'll just say his name. It's not part of AA or any of that kind of stuff. And he makes no bones about it. But he claims that he fell asleep one day and Jesus Christ spoke to him and brought him to the library in heaven. This is an interview that I actually watched him talk. This is from him. And he has no education in Aramaic, in original Greek, in Hebrew, anything. And Jesus told him that he's going to start giving him new books, that the Bible's outdated, and he's going to start giving him new books to put in the Bible that'll make Jesus the most popular name on the planet and give him an understanding of the Hebrew language that nobody else knows. And he can have two books to start out with, and he's thinking to himself, this is what he says. He says, I'm thinking to myself, I see this book on the shelf. It says John 22. Well, there's not 22 chapters in John. The Bible wasn't written in chapters originally anyway, so that kind of pokes a hole in that. But he sees John 22, and he thinks to himself, how can I steal this from Jesus? But he says, in heaven, whatever you think comes over a giant loudspeaker and everybody hears it. So Jesus heard his thoughts about wanting to steal it. And Jesus scolded him and said, no, I'm only giving you two books to start out with. You take these back and I want you to rewrite the Bible. So he comes back from this dream with this enthusiasm and he starts rewriting scripture. And it's called The Passion Translation. The problem with it is, and this is exactly what I'm seeing with what you're talking about, it's not a translation. It's a different text. You can call it a translation to get it under the door, but it really isn't. If this thing ends up being a different text, then the truth of the matter is, it's not the big book. Sorry, that's not the big book. They call it something else, but it's not the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's how I feel about this Passion Translation. It's not the Bible. And I mean, you take a verse that says, Jesus is my rock, or in the New King James, thou art my rock, Jesus, or the New American Standard, Jesus is solid and my rock. In the Passion Translation, Jesus is my best friend. He never lets harm come to me. Nothing of tribulation comes my way. What? And so that's the difference between a translation and a totally different text entirely. And that's what I'm thinking of as you're telling me this story is there's a movement in our world of trying to dumb down, trying to change and tip things on its head so people can get their agenda made. And I see it. I'm just going to say it. I see it in our government. I see it in our country. And I see it in AA.
You know, that's a very, very interesting story. And it is. It's a parallel example of a misuse of the word translation.
Yeah.
So you can say we're gonna take the big book and we're gonna turn it into plain English, all right? But that's not what they're gonna do. It's gonna be a rewriting. So there's a number of concerned people, and you know what they're doing is they're reaching out to their GSRs, their DCMs, their delegates, and they're questioning the process. Like is this really the process? How did you come up with it's a translation, so it can go to the translation committee, who can have it, who can pay to have it done by an editing bureau or something? How did you bend that to a translation?
Mm.
What you're really doing is you're rewriting it and you're simplifying it, and they're using the justification of making it somewhere in the sixth grade reading level. We want this to be able to be understood by people with only a sixth grade reading level. Well, I got to be honest with you, Monty. If I don't understand a word, there's a thing called a dictionary, And if the big book isn't written in plain English, what is it written in? So I'm letting my opinion, spill out on the table a little bit.
I hear you.
But you understand.
Yeah, yeah.
You understand. I'm a hardcore traditionalist. I'm sorry about that.
Here's the deal. Chris. The fact is, in fact the first interview I ever had on Take 12 Recovery Radio was a gentleman by the name of Juan O. Now Juan was a stickler for traditions. Juan was a hardcore. I mean, this guy would not budge. He was inflexible in anything. And I knew that if I could get him on board with the idea of Take 12 Recovery Radio, right, that would be a good thing. And he had a lot of wisdom. And he agreed to come on. He was the first guest I ever had on. One story, he learned to read English by reading the big book, by reading the third edition of the big book. That's how he learned to read English. And the deal of it is there are more people than that have that same story. And there's stuff in the big book that it demands that you get a period dictionary. It calls for you to do some investigative work. And when you do that, that's when you get the filet mignon of the text, And so if we're making it a sixth grade level, I don't know. We're taking the challenge of it away from folks. I think it would be a shame, a real shame. But what do I know?
you can write a Bible for children if you want, right?
Yeah.
But is it gonna have the same depth and weight of the scriptures?
No.
I feel kind of the same way about this, but what are you going to do? Yeah. I'm only one vote, Monty.
That's right.
I stay humble. I stay humble with my one vote.
There you go.
Okay.
There you go. God. Trust God, love people.
All right, let's finish this thing.
All right.
Let's finish this thing up. It says here, to sum up, for thousands of alcoholics yet to come, AA does have an answer, but there is one condition. We must at all costs preserve our essential unity. It must be made unbreakably secure. Without permanent unity, there can be little lasting recovery for anyone. Hence, our future absolutely depends upon the creation and observance of a sound group tradition. First things will always need to be first. Humility before success, unity before fame. That's, that's the only time I've ever seen him explain first things first. I swear to God.
Yeah.
So anyway, Monty, I blew through the 12 traditions. I just read them, you know, right through.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is it is in the next couple of pages, he breaks them down and he does an article on each one of the traditions. And that's where we'll dig in deep.
All right.
You know what I mean? Tonight was seeing the whole ball of wax.
Sure.
And as we go through the next couple of shows, you know, because they're short, we might do a couple of them a night, you know, because they're not even a full page each, some of them. So we might do more than one tradition a night, if that's all right with you. But
yeah,
but we'll get deeper into it in the next couple of weeks.
All right. Good going. And maybe we'll get some interesting emails in relation to the discussion that we just had. you know, what can I say? All right, Chris. All right, Chris. Thank you so very much. Folks, listen, we do want to hear from you. Our email is take12radio@comcast.net. Use the number 12 there, take12radio@comcast.net. And visit our website at take12radio.com. We have a plethora. I love that word. We have a plethora of recovery-focused shows for you. And we even got we've got a whole couple of segments that we're going to be doing. Right now, we are working on developing 3 hours of the best of the 60s as far as music goes. But this time, we're going to listen to these songs sober, guys. Sober, you may appreciate them a little differently than you did back in the 60s. So be looking forward to that as well. All right, until our next broadcast, this is the Monty Man along with Chris S., and we are wishing God's perfect serenity for you. For more recovery workshops with Chris S. and the Monty Man, visit our website at take12radio.com and click on the Recovery Workshops banner.
This has been a broadcast of Take 12 Recovery Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting.
Kitty, 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 kitty. Meow, meow, meow.
Woof, woof.